The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. Got a series of what are hopefully interesting questions for everybody. We'll have a variety. We always start off with usually a Social Security question, so I'm sure we're going to go there first. Jim and I are back from the annual Schwab conference. I call it Impact. So we were at Impact 2022. Some of our listeners may have been there as well, because I know we have some advisors who listen to the show. Hope you had a good time. We had a good time. Interesting stuff down there. I took some students. I escorted some students. They have a really strong student program down there. So we want to put out a shout out or a thanks to Schwab for sponsoring students to come down and experience as an educational opportunity what goes on in the registered investment advisory world, RIA world. I know several of my students were able to network and connect with some advisors who might be interested in hiring them someday, which is always what students like to hear. So I want to thank Schwab for that. Also, we have a little bit of good news to announce. Jacob, the paraplanner in our office, passed the CFP exam. So he is shortly going to officially be. He hasn't been officially anointed with the CFP marks yet, but that should be coming shortly. So wanted to congratulate Jacob. We now have four, or we will have four here shortly, CFPs in the office, because Jim and I, of course, are certified financial planners. Greg's certified financial planner. And now Jacob being the youngest member of the CFP crew at Jim Salnier and Associates. So want to congratulate Jacob. I know it's... I remember that feeling, knowing that I had passed after studying all that time and preparing, et cetera, and it was a kind of an emotionally draining exam. Even today, they do it in one day. It used to be a day and a half when Jim and I took it, but Jim, I think, had to take it in a really old school manner. As far as the format goes,
I took it with pen and paper. Literally, we had a. Fill in questions. It wasn't computerized at all.
Yeah, I was still pen and paper, but we had bubble sheets and stuff, so it was kind of like a school exam, if you will. But yeah,
I had essays. Did yours? Where you had to describe what you were doing, what your thought process was.
I think they dropped that. It's when I did it. Now
I complained incessantly about it.
Yeah, so I do remember that being a part of it, but I think they had dropped that. I don't remember having to write a narrative about anything. It was such a horrifying experience going through it as far as the prep and taking the test that I kind of put it out of my mind when I was done. So they don't do that now. It's all computer scoring. That's how Jacob literally took it yesterday and knew yesterday. So,
yeah, he knew yesterday. Nice. I had to wait several months, and then you get that envelope in the mail. And it's the envelope, folks, this is going back 30 years, that it was computer-generated, but it had the little dotted lines along three of the four corners, and you had to kind of fold it and peel, and then you could open the letter.
Oh, right. Uh-huh. Like the security envelopes.
Yeah. And it would only say pass or fail. So I had to deal with 2 or 3 months of wondering if I passed before I got the letter. And then, of course, the opening of the letter to see if you passed or failed. Jacob, he said when he did it, as soon as you finish and you click submit, they tell you. So I'm not sure which is better, to know right away or to wait and chill out a little. I don't know. But doesn't matter. He passed, and I want to congratulate him as well.
Yeah. So that's good. So good news all the way around so far.
All right. And you gave a shout out to the Schwab Conference. Mm-hmm. So that was good as well. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. It was my first Schwab Conference. We've been with TD Ameritrade and, of course, Schwab, formerly known in my eyes as the evil empire, who swallowed up innocent little TD Ameritrade. And now we're onto the Schwab side. And I went over to the Schwab side with hesitancy, folks, because we're not a huge company, Chris and I. And we lead with financial planning, and TD really embraced us. And I was worried that Schwab wouldn't, but I will give Schwab's, at least the reps who were there, a shout out. I know I didn't get to see you much, Chris, at all. You were with your students. Mm-hmm. Chris and I did spend about an hour together, believe it or not, that's it, on a 3-day seminar, a 3-day symposium rather. And during that hour, we spoke to several software vendors that we're interested in bringing on board, and most likely will at least one of them bring them on board. So I didn't really have a chance to spend much time with Chris, but there wasn't much free time for me at all, folks. I was very, very busy at that presentation because there were over 275 vendors, and I swear I must have visited almost every single booth.
Wow.
And I did. And one thing I can say is that the Schwab reps were very helpful with every single question I had, very welcoming when they found out I was on the TD side coming over. They even, because I had a question on the TD side that was bugging the heck out of me, and I don't want to bore people with it, but I was shocked TD had this approach, and the Schwab people were shocked TD had this approach to a certain thing that Pershing, my previous custodian, and Schwab, my soon-to-be custodian, have both allowed, but TD would not allow. And they didn't believe me. They would say, no, TD has to allow that. They have to have that. And I'm like, no, they don't. They went to great lengths to track down a TD expert who then had to call the home office. This is how deep it, you know me, Chris. I go down rabbit holes. And finally, they found the answer, and it was right. They don't allow it. And it was a surprise to everyone. And they thanked me for bringing it up. And it gave me pause, though, because it's not. Someday I'll let people know what it was I was talking about. It has to do with estate planning. You know me with estate planning, Chris. I'm kind of geeking out on it. Anyways, my point is Schwab was phenomenal on helping me track down this. And I'm not throwing TD under the bus. TD explained to them why they don't allow it. Their attorneys interpret the law differently than Pershing and Schwab. And that's all it came down to. And in fact, one of the TD reps, excuse me, Schwab reps who were trying to help me, he even said to me, he says, I guarantee you it came down to the attorneys. And he was right. So anyways, I'll tell you later, Chris, what it was all about. But I enjoyed it. I found it very interesting and pleasurable to be there. There's a couple of takes I have on it that rubbed me the wrong way, but that has to be with how the industry rubs me, not necessarily anything to do with Schwab. And I'll definitely share more on that on a future show. But the most important thing, Chris, that I found out, even though you and I only spent an hour together, you were still in my mind because you annoy the hell out of me when you tell me things I don't know, which is not very difficult to do. And then it seems I can't escape what it is you just told me. And it has to do with the damn monkey eating a banana from the bottom up.
Oh, did you try it?
So I tell you, I went to every single booth almost.
Asking for bananas.
asking about bananas. No, especially if the booths had little stuffed animals. All the booths, folks, by these companies, they give Chachi away. Yeah. They give, is it Chachi or Chacho Chachka. Or whatever the hell they call it? What is it?
Chachka or swag.
Swag. All right. Mm-hmm. They give swag away and they have all different things. And it's designed simply to lure you in. Mm-hmm. And like the Venus flytrap, mm-hmm. as soon as you get in there, boom, they're on you. Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to every single place with little stuffed animals. And I was collecting a stuffed animal from every booth that had a stuffed animal. Mm-hmm. And I was putting them in my T. Rowe Price bag, which took me about 15 minutes to get
fill
that bag,
up.
Folks, because mm-hmm. I had to talk to T. Rowe Price. So I was filling this T. Rowe Price bag with little stuffed animals. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to give them to Rachel. So aww. See how sweet I am?
So sweet. You should wait and use it for Valentine's Day. Don't give them all at once. Just dole them out.
Maybe I should save them because I have about 12 or 13 of them. So every time every time I screw up, which isn't too often with her, I just give her a new animal. Here, honey, sorry about that. Here's a stuffed animal.
Yeah, thinking about
but
you.
But anyways, the Manning and Napier booth, and I had no idea who the hell Manning and Napier were until I went and talked to them, had monkeys.
Mm, little stuffed monkeys?
Little stuffed monkeys. Mm-hmm. So I went there and I said, you know, can I have a monkey? And the guy gives me the monkey and then he gives me the sales pitch on mm-hmm. who Manning and Napier were. And I talked to him for a good 10, 15 minutes. And to the best that I can understand, they're an active money manager doing separately managed accounts. Mm-hmm. Fine. And I listened to him and their philosophy and their approach. And at the end, I asked him, I said, why do you guys have a monkey? And as their little mascot thing that they're giving away. And mm-hmm. he says, well, we really wanted to create something that would lure people in. I guess the other stuff they were giving away wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And it was his idea. It was this guy I was talking to. It was his idea. He says, I just thought, how about Manning the monkey? Instead of Manning and Napier, mm-hmm. Manning the monkey or whatever their name is. I think mm-hmm. it's Manning. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, okay. And then I said to him, I says, you want to know something interesting about monkeys? Mm-hmm. And I'm not making this up, Chris. Mm-hmm. He just interrupted me and he said, they peel their bananas from the bottom. And I said, how did you know that?
He listens to our podcast. No.
And the guy says to me, he says, well, that's how I eat my bananas.
Mm-hmm. Well, once you try it.
Well, hold on. Okay. It gets better.
Oh, great.
I go off to a class. I can't even remember which one. And I'm leaving the class, and there's 8,000 people there, folks. I think there were 5,000 attendees and 3,000 guests. It was nuts. And I'm leaving the class, and you're just in this big herd of people. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy walking in front of me, and he has a backpack on. Mm-hmm. And falling out the back of his backpack, literally just a few more steps would have broke free, was a banana. Mm-hmm. So I got up to him and I said, and you got to be careful. One dude doesn't want to go up to another dude and say, hey, your banana's hanging out. So I instead went up to him and I just said, you're about to lose your banana in your backpack. Mm-hmm. And he reaches back and he grabs it and he says, oh, this is bad. I'm probably not going to eat it anyways. Thank you. And he's pulling the banana up to him. And then he says to me, Chris, he says, oh, it's not too bad. I can eat it. And he peeled the damn banana from the bottom. I was in shock. Listeners, on the last podcast that people peel bananas from the bottom. And now I can't escape people and monkeys peeling bananas from the bottom. Anyways, I just had to share that because it was one of the last things you told me on the podcast before I left Kentucky. Came here, I spent 2 days at home, and I went back to Denver and spent 3 days down in Denver. I didn't want to do the commute, folks, so I stayed in a hotel down there. And monkeys, bananas, peeling from the bottom. Told you, Chris, I can't escape you.
It's amazing. You know, this reminds me of what I always told my kids growing up. You know, you may not believe me now, but at some point in your life, you're going to realize everything I've ever told you is true.
So anyways, sorry about all that, folks. We're just we literally haven't seen and talked to each other. We saw each other for an hour at the Schwab show. We had an interview, a joint meeting this morning. Chris and I haven't even had a chance to debrief on that. And here we are recording the podcast. So anyways, I just had to catch up with you, Chris, and let you know. I'm done with this. I'm going to keep peeling my bananas from the top, monkeys and random people with backpacks be damned. I'm still doing it from the top. Okay.
And you have that right.
Yeah. I do. All right. And if anyone else, if you send me a question or you want to share, if you peel your banana from the top
or bottom.
Is this
a new poll? Now we want to figure out.
It's our new poll. It's our new poll. Do you listeners peel your bananas from the top or the bottom? And if you peel from the bottom, why? I don't get
that. You haven't even tried it.
It's just a banana. It doesn't matter if you eat it which way. It's the same. It tastes the same.
It tastes the same. I agree. It has nothing to do with taste. It's all with the functionality of the peel. Give it a try. Try it once. You may not like it. You can go back to the top. Like I admitted before, I still peel from the top out of habit. But when I'm thinking about it, I peel it from the bottom because it is easier. And you still retain that little handle at the bottom. It's really nice.
That's what the guy told me, that the Manning and Napier thing. I asked him, why do you peel yours from the bottom? He said the handle. I don't understand what handle he's talking
about.
The
stem that you usually peel off.
Oh, you use that as the handle. Mm-hmm. I see.
Just gives you a little extra handle down there, yeah.
Because he did mention the handle. Uh-huh. He says, I have the handle.
Just give it a try. It literally is easier, too.
Okay. All right. Well, we've already lost like half our listeners. So for the half that is still here, yeah. We're getting to questions
here we go.
Now. All right. We're going to start with the Social Security question like we always do. This is a quote unquote George. He is from Texas. He says, this came in August 18th of this year. Mm-hmm. He says, hi, this is, we'll call him George mm-hmm. from Texas. Hello to Jim, Chris, Bob, and Junior. So very nice. Gave a shout out to mm-hmm. everybody. Mm-hmm. And he put a Go Pats in there. I think he was trying in August to get this mm-hmm. question answered earlier. Thanks. The Pats are stinking this year, but yes, Go Pats. Okay. I have a question about what to expect for my wife's Social Security benefit. She turned 65 in July, and we intend to start her Social Security at her full retirement age of 66 and a half. According to Social Security statement, that will be about $960 a month. However, she worked in jobs as a teacher where she didn't pay into Social Security. She worked for the first 9 years of her career as a full-time teacher, quit when our son was born. We rolled over her Texas teacher retirement balance into an IRA at that time. I don't have a record of the annual amount, but I estimate the balance in 1998 when it was rolled over was about $35,000. That IRA currently is worth $200,000. She worked in part-time jobs paying into Social Security over the following years, and in recent years, she has been tutoring in the public school system. She has a 403B account with a balance of $21,000. Does this have an impact on WEP? And then he just shares with you, Chris, he tried several calculators. He tried the Maximize My Social Security program that you've recommended. And he can't seem to get a complete answer. And he says, if I put the full lump sum, why don't I hold off on his question? Because people aren't going to know what he's getting at. Why don't you explain the bind he's in and what he's getting at?
It's a good question. It opens up the door to a couple things that we don't talk about very frequently on here. We do talk about WEP, the windfall elimination provision, which applies to people who participate in what are called non-covered pensions. That's a pension that is not covered in the Social Security system. So think of it as an alternative to Social Security. And like many people, he mentioned his wife worked as a teacher. A lot of school districts opt out of Social Security and instead have a replacement that is a pension plan as a replacement. And that can be a defined benefit plan or a defined contribution plan like a 401k. It's similar, I guess, to a 401k. It's not actually a 401k. But it behaves much like a 401k, and that can be a replacement for Social Security when approved by these governmental agencies as a replacement to Social Security. Alternative, I guess, might be a way of describing it. So what she did, this happened a long time ago, and when she stopped working there, she actually opted to take the lump sum. Now, that could have been a lump sum that was a lump sum option within a defined benefit pension plan, which normally would have paid her a monthly amount at some point in the future, but she could opt for a lump sum instead. or it might have been a defined contribution plan. I'm guessing back in 1988, where the defined contribution plans as alternatives to Social Security were not nearly as popular. That was probably a defined benefit plan that happened to have a lump sum option where you could just take it and walk away. Well, at a high level, I need to remind everybody that even if you have that lump sum style, there's no monthly benefit attached to it. If it's an alternative to Social Security and it is your main retirement plan at work, it's going to trigger WEP, Windfall Elimination Provision. Essentially, with WEP, they alter the formula to calculate your benefit so that it does not, I guess, unjustly in the eyes of the Social Security Administration and Congress, reward you by creating a larger Social Security benefit as a percentage of your income versus what you really are owed. And that's a bad way of describing it. So let me say it a different way. Social Security and the formula is designed to replace a higher percentage of low-wage workers' pre-retirement earnings with Social Security than high-wage earners. And that you can see reflected in those percentages that as part of your PIA calculation that I've walked through before, where up to, you know, in 2022 terms, if someone was turning 62 in 2022, the first $1,000 of their average earnings over their life is replaced at 90%. So very high percentage replacement. Then it drops off to 32 for a while, and then it drops to 15 after that. And that's what I mean by Social Security is designed to replace a higher percentage of your pre-retirement earnings for a low-wage worker than a high-wage worker. Well, those who are receiving a Social Security benefit due to other work, but then also have this non-covered pension, they might appear to be a very low-wage worker. And so when calculating their Social Security, they would get more of a benefit than they probably are justly warranted due to the fact that they have this other pension that normally people wouldn't have. That's the benefit they get for working out of the system. Social Security is adjusted so that the WEP offset, the maximum penalty, is in 2022 terms about $500 a month. And reason I say that is because that first bend point is about $1,000. And instead of replacing 90% of that, they only replace 40% of that if you have the full WEP punishment, if you will, if you're subject to WEP. And there's a few things that will reduce that, though, that penalty. That penalty can be reduced by either your non-covered pension being very small. They limit your WEP offset to being no more than one half of the non-covered pension. So for instance, if you had a non-covered pension that was a couple hundred dollars a month, so just a tiny benefit that you earned by being a teacher for just a few years or something like that, they're not going to slap you with the whole $500 WEP offset. They're going to limit the WEP reduction to your Social Security to only half of your non-covered pension. So if you have a $200 pension per month, they'll reduce your Social Security by $100. Instead of that, $500, which is the maximum penalty. And so that's one limiting factor. The other thing that you can have that might reduce your WEP offset is if you have more than 20 years of substantial participation in Social Security. Once you get to 20 years of participation through other jobs in Social Security, they start reducing that maximum punishment, if you will, until you get to 30 years and then they eliminate it. So even if you have WEP due to your earnings outside of Social Security, if you've got 30 substantial years of participation, and substantial doesn't mean just a few dollars. It's last time I checked, it was up in the 20-some thousand dollars range in current terms. As long as you have substantial participation for 30 years, they'll ignore WEP. They won't affect you with that at all. So there's a couple mitigating factors that can reduce your WEP. Coming back to this person has an interesting story because they had a lump sum pension that was available to them. But she cashed it out. She took it out and rolled it into an IRA all the way back in 1988. So she doesn't currently have it. She doesn't currently have that non-covered pension as a lump sum. She's rolled it out. Well, the way they deal with that is whenever you have a lump sum equivalent, the IRS, or I'm sorry, Social Security Administration has a table where you can convert your lump sum amount into an equivalent monthly benefit in order to see if the WEP should be applied to you less than its full amount, that $500 a month that I was talking about. So if you go to this table, if you go to this, the POMS, the Program Operations Manual System, POMS, it is, just so you know, the section is RS, like Randy Sam, 00605.364. On that page, at the bottom is a table that shows how to convert a lump sum amount into an equivalent monthly pension amount. And there's different columns depending on the year that the lump sum award is made. And back in 1988, you'd go to the column that says actuarial value lump sum award date May 31st of 2007 or earlier. 1988 is earlier than 2007. You'd look at the age. You'd go down to the row where the age when the lump sum award was made. And then you find the divisor. And in this particular case, being 40 or under, which is what her age was back when she got the lump sum award, the divisor is 172.7. So what that means is you take that $35,000 that she rolled out at that time and divide it by 172.7. Turns out that that's $203. So that tells me the Social Security Administration is going to look upon that lump sum award as the equivalent of $203 for the rest of her life. And so they're going to reduce the WEP offset, in my opinion. If, again, I don't have her whole earnings record, and I don't necessarily have all the information I'd need for me to be 100% confident in this, but looks to me like the WEP offset for her is only going to be about $100 a month, because she's hitting that limiting factor where they promise not to reduce your Social Security benefit for WEP more than half of the non-covered pension. Well, I just told you what the non-covered pension converts to a monthly amount. It's just over $200. So half that is $100. They'll say you are affected by WEP, but only $100 per month, not the $500. So that's good news. So I suspect, and I would love to hear from this person when they actually go to claim at her full retirement age in about a year or so, and see if they really are doing it that way. Now, I will also say 1988 is a long time ago. That's 34 years ago. It's possible that that lump sum award back in 1988 was not properly reported to Social Security, and so they may not even be aware of it. So there may not be a WEP offset at all. The other thing that may have happened, and we don't have all the information here that would allow them to escape WEP completely, if you have a pension like this and you decide to separate from service and you want to walk away from the pension, if you take only the money that you put in and don't take any of the money that the government, the school district put in, if you let them keep their money and you only take your money, you escape WEP. That's a little known get out of jail free card. Now, you have to leave money behind usually, so you certainly wouldn't want to leave a lot of money behind in order for this, but that is the rule. If you take only before becoming eligible for the pension at normal retirement age, which is usually, 62, 65, depending on the pension system, if you decide to take a lump sum and walk away, if you take only your money, and it's possible that was just her money, she doesn't have any WEP to deal with at all. So there's, I guess, on one hand, possibility she's going to have zero offset, but I'm predicting worst case scenario is only going to be about $100 a month because of the way they have this conversion factor to translate that lump sum amount into an equivalent monthly pension amount. This is quite a confusing topic area. So if this is the first time you're hearing about WEP, that whole description was probably very, very confusing. If you're somewhat familiar with WEP or very familiar, what I talked about there probably made a lot of sense, even though there were a couple little nuances that even those familiar with WEP may not be fully comfortable with. It took me a while to decipher all these little details that are attached to WEP. I'll make one last comment before bringing Jim back in. WEP does not trigger until you actually take the first dollar of that pension. So if you have a lump sum amount, like a defined contribution plan, it is possible to collect Social Security for a while before having any WEP offset by just choosing not to take any money out or roll it out like they did. So not a single dollar can leave. As soon as the first dollar leaves the pension, whether it's going to you or you're rolling it over somewhere, that triggers the reporting of WEP and you'll have the offset. So I just wanted to point that out. In their case, they triggered it because they rolled it over in 1988. It's been triggered if there is WEP. But for somebody who's holding this, getting into their 60s, they might claim, you know, Social Security at mid-60s or something, and maybe delay taking money out of their pension because they have other funds available or something. They delay it till 70 or something like that. They could collect Social Security unwept for, you know, quite a few years before they trigger it by taking that first dollar out. So wanted to point that out as well. That's another thing that isn't clear to a lot of people. So that was probably a longer answer to that than Jim was hoping for, but it was had a couple interesting elements involved here. So
it did. It's rubbing off on you. You're going down rabbit holes.
Well, you keep throwing me these questions that have all kinds of interesting little nuances to them.
It's kind of funny. We got an email because Greg is going to be coming on. It is National Long-Term Care Insurance Awareness Month now, folks. So that's November. So happy Long-Term Care Insurance Awareness Month. So I asked Greg recently, Chris, if he would come on and do a series of shows with us, and he said he would. So we'll be bringing him on beginning next week. I got a question already from a listener, and they put in the subject line LTC question. So we're going to see if Greg can answer it. And I looked at it. I don't want to get too deep into what it is, but I started thinking to myself, Chris, oh my goodness, I could turn this question into an EDU show easily. Right. So I forwarded it to Greg. Greg insists to get the questions ahead of time, folks. So I sent him the question ahead of time, and I said, hey, Greg, take a look over this question. I'm thinking of bringing you on the show to answer it. I kid you not. And Greg laughed about this after. He writes back to me, Chris, and he says, essentially, I don't think I'm going to be able to answer that, Jim. We should probably look for a different question. And then he said, because here's why. And then he went into like this tirade of about 7 or 8 paragraphs of why he's not going to answer it. And all right. These rabbit holes he's going, well, because of this, we can't do that. And then this and this. And he ends with something like, so I don't think we can answer this question.
Well, we can, just on an EDU show.
I wrote back to him and I said, Greg, I sent you this question specifically because I wanted to go down rabbit holes. And look at you. You spent all this time explaining to me why you can't answer the question, and that's the show. And he wrote back and he said something to the effect of, oh, I guess you're rubbing off on me. It was funny. So even Greg is going down rabbit holes. So we are going to bring him on for that. Okay, let's get to some questions of the week. I do have a question of the week, but I also have a confusing question. I did not listen to any of your Social Security shows when I was gone. I probably should have. I did listen to the tax show you and Bob did, but I didn't listen to your Social Security ones. Nothing personal, just didn't listen to them. I got this email in, and I don't know if it's a joke, if it's a drunk gentleman, or did you say something? Uh-oh. He says, he's from Michigan. He's a Michiganian. Chris, why hasn't Jim completed his analysis of people born in 1959, 1960, 1961, and 62 concerning Social Security mm-hmm. amounts in high and low inflationary environments mm-hmm. when you turn 60? Mm-hmm. Did you mention
that's the
something?
Question?
I didn't say
you were doing it. I said I was going to do that.
Oh.
I have not yet had time to do that, but fully intend to do what I promised. Essentially, what people are having trouble wrapping their minds around is what is the severity of the donut hole that I was describing, where there's a year that you completely miss any type of inflation adjustments, both wage and price inflation adjustments. And then I propose there's a second year you, quote, miss, and I'm doing air quotes, because it's delayed by a year. You technically do get it, but it's delayed. So you experience a whole nother year without any inflation adjustments. You get delayed effect, which after I thought about it a little more, it is true. You don't you don't technically fully miss it. You don't miss a year until the year you pass away. In the year you pass away, you never get the inflation adjustment for that year because they're delayed by a year. So anyway, that's a detail probably not necessarily at this point. But to clarify things for people, to kind of show them what are the effects of this, when you have a spike, and that's the key, that's the issue, is that when you experience the donut hole, which is the year you turn 61, if that happens to be a much higher than average inflation year, everyone misses the inflation adjustment for that year. It's not like some people get it and some people don't. Everybody misses it based on the way that Social Security works. But I was proposing, and this is the reason I brought this all up a few weeks ago or months ago at this point, is that missing it when it's 1.5, 2, 2.5, 3, which it normally is, versus missing one that's 8.7, that's different, right? That's the people that happen to be unlucky enough to miss an 8.7 is not the same as those people who miss an average year. And to kind of, some people have proposed, well, you know, it doesn't sound like it's going to make that big a difference. And that's where I came up with the idea, well, why don't I run an actual calculation where we have a hypothetical person with a certain earnings record, and let's look at it if they were born in 1959, 1960, 1961, 1962, right through this phase, these years where these people are turning 61 during these spikes of inflation, and see with the same earnings record who comes out on the short end, you know, who is most affected by the donut hole itself. So that's where that went, and so I did make that promise, and I'm still going to do that, and but I've been a little busy since I made that promise a couple of weeks ago and haven't done it yet. But it had nothing to do with you. So he's throwing you under the bus.
He threw me under the bus. I saw that and I'm like, what are you throwing me under the bus for? I have no idea what this dude's talking about. Okay, now I understand it. I do have to say his name, though, just because it's cute. And we never name names.
Wait a minute.
I'm going to name his name.
Okay.
He is Dudley the dog. So someone's dog is writing to you. Who would name themselves Dudley the dog?
I do want to point out one other thing. I've had a couple people email where there's clearly a misunderstanding how the wage inflation is applied. That I just want to make one last comment to clean up one thing that seems to be boiling around out there. And that is, some people are under the false understanding that even though you don't get additional wage inflation after 60 and 61, that the rest of your earnings record is somehow still benefiting from the wage inflation after you turn 60. That's simply not true. The bend points and wage inflation application stops, is frozen in place based on age 60 wage levels. You don't get additional adjustments to anything after that, because some people have pointed out, oh, they're not that worried about it. My earnings weren't that high when I was 60 or 61, so not having them and inflated. But the rest of my earnings get inflated. No, they don't. The whole wage inflation indexing stops at 60, at age 60. And your bend points are fixed in place for the rest of your life at that point. Other people think that, oh, one of the mitigating factors is at least my bend points will continue to go up. Nope. That's not how it works. That is not how it works. So I just wanted to mention that to a couple people. And those people who were thinking that or brought that up to me will know who I'm talking to. That's not how this works. So.
Okay. Alrighty, let's get into some other questions beyond Social Security. I thought that question was a joke and it wasn't going to take too long.
No, I really did make that promise. I just didn't make a promise that you would do it.
Okay, all right. Well, I thought the guy was joking and we were going to move on and I was going to get to other questions. I didn't know it turned to more Social Security. All right, so let's get into, I've got a bunch of questions here that I want to kind of get to. This one came in April 25th. I don't know where the gentleman is from, but we will call him George as we always do. He says, I'm interested in your thoughts on utilizing 72T option prior to 59 and a half to support my early retirement. I'm 47 years young and hope to retire at age 50. He gets into a lot of other stuff, folks. I'm going to skip over it. Doesn't really apply to the question. And he says, now I'll get to the more meat and potatoes. I'm currently maxing out my new company's 401k into the Roth option. I plan to perform Roth conversions when I retire to minimize the RMD impact at age 72. I also want to take advantage of lower income years I will have. My immediate 3-year plan, remember, Chris, he's 47 and wants to retire at 50. My immediate 3-year plan is to continue funding my company's Roth 401k as well as my Roth IRA as well as my brokerage account. I am hoping I can save enough in my brokerage account, and by utilizing 72T, my IRA and brokerage account will support me until 59 and a half. What are your thoughts on using 72T, as well as the idea of me doing Roth conversions now while I'm working and when I retire? I earn $115,000 a year and I am single. So he's got a couple of things that we're running along here. I just want him to proceed with caution. He does give his dollar amounts, Chris, just so you know. He has $35,000 in a 401k. He has $300,000 already in a Roth. And he has $1.2 million in a traditional IRA. So he's trying to get that traditional IRA's balance down, Chris, when he retires. Right now, he's at a new employer, and it sounds to me like he's maxing out just the Roth option at his new employer. His new employer does provide a match, so my gut tells me that match is going into a traditional 401k. However, if Secure Act 2 passes, and if it has the provision that is supposedly going to allow employer matches to go into the Roth option, maybe he could direct that in. I think the thing that jumped out at me, Chris, and you share what's jumping out at you, without getting into the 72T and all the caveats with that, I don't know if he's overemphasizing Roths, and I'm hesitant or not. Without my recommendations are he needs to do an analysis. Some Roth conversions may help him, but he's retiring at 50. He never mentioned that he's going to retire with this massive pension and he's going to live off of it. He specifically said he wants to use brokerage savings that he has, as well as Roth 72T payments to support him essentially from 50 to 72. Or at least 50 to 59 and a half, essentially 10 years, at which point I surmise he's just going to start spending from his IRA without having to worry about the 10% early withdrawal penalty. But the man earns $115,000. I'm just kind of crunching some numbers here, wondering if there's sufficient enough assets for him to retire. He's going to, at the lifestyle he wants, he's going to have a very long go-go phase. From 50 to perhaps early 70s, maybe 20-plus year go-go phase. He doesn't share with us if his health is failing and he's trying to retire early because of that. So I can only assume he's going to have a very long go-go phase. He has $1.2 million, but he's earning $115,000 a year. Granted, he's saving quite a bit of it. But I really want him to make sure, and these are just my thoughts. Other people may disagree. My initial thoughts running through my mind, just make sure you truly do have enough money and enough money to support your fund spending. And if you're going to try to make 72T payments stretch out, in addition to $350,000 in a brokerage account for essentially a decade, that's going to be a pretty substantial hit to your $115,000 that you currently have. And I'm just trying to figure an average minimum dignity floor, even for a single person, is going to be about $50,000+ a year, maybe a little less, but what we see in our office is generally about $50,000 a year. I'm assuming there's going to be some reasonable fund spending going on. And I'm not sure if $350,000 will last you a decade. It's only $35,000 a year to cover fund and minimum dignity floor. But then, yes, I concede you will have 72T payments, which I'll explain at the end of this answer, folks, what that means. You will have 72T payments, but he also said he wants to continue converting. You can't do both, listener, with one 1.2 million IRA. If you set that $1.2 million IRA up for 72T payment schedule, you can't alter that schedule. You can't go in and start converting that IRA into a Roth as well. So it means you have to break out what you think you're going to want to convert over that decade and the IRA that you want to turn into a 72T. And you're going to have to look at those payments with your 350 and decide if that's enough to get you for a decade. With all that that I'm throwing out there, Chris, the other thoughts running through, again, my mind on this, don't overconvert. You're a single man. If you die, and he didn't share with us, Chris, that he wanted to leave his money. I'm converting to lower his future taxes. Okay, I get that. But what if you die with Roth? In our opinion, it goes to waste. Keep that in mind as a single person. You didn't mention if you have children. You mentioned you're 50. I'm 59, never married, no children. I don't have much assets in a Roth. I don't have anyone to leave it to. It was a waste for me to be converting. I also don't have many assets in IRAs, at least to the point where I felt I would be pushed into rather high brackets. Most of my assets are going to be in non-qualified brokerage style holdings. So I personally don't have big Roths because I don't want to waste my lower brackets in retirement. I don't want to waste my 10, my 12, or soon to be 15 brackets. So I don't mind having some money in IRAs. So those are the thoughts running through my mind. I'll get into what 72Ts are, but you're the main planner. I've done this for decades, folks, but I unfortunately am more of the CEO now of the firm. What thoughts are running through your mind? Did I capture things? Did I not capture it all? What are running through your mind with his scenario? Just the initial 30,000-foot view questions.
Yeah, as you're reading through everything, I was hoping when you went through the list of accounts that he had more trying to retire at 50. At 50, you may have a very long life ahead of you.
Well, let me, mm-hmm. I did skip a little. Let me give you all the info then. I don't want to take from this man. So, again, I'll get into his assets. 300. I made a mistake. It's 35,000 in a 401k, not 300 something thousand.
That's 35,000. 35 grand in a 401k.
35 in a 401k. 300,000 in a Roth. Mm-hmm. 350 in a brokerage, and his 1.2 million in a traditional IRA. He has a $600,000 home, and he owes $140,000 on it. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Well, I think it's possible to retire on that. People might be saying, "What do you mean you're worried about him retiring? He's got $1.8 million or whatever it is." At age 50, first of all, that's a very long period of time that he may have substantial medical expenses. Because once you get into your 50s, if you're not on some kind of subsidized group plan, he's got 15 years there to go before Medicare. He's the kind of person that would likely benefit greatly by them reducing the Medicare eligibility age. We see a lot of people that are kind of on the edge, and if they had lower cost medical, then they would normally have to pay unsubsidized out there, that they could retire, but alas, they cannot, or they don't feel they comfortably can, so they push it off and wait until they get closer to Medicare age. Well, he's got a long time in the open market, we call it. That makes me nervous. You're right that unless he has a very basic lifestyle, that
can I pause you right there?
Sure.
I'm not trying to burst your bubble. Let's talk a little bit about what you just said, because you got me thinking. if he's going to try for ACA credits, that kills his 72T strategy and it kills his conversion strategy. I just wanted to throw that out there because the 72T payments would be 100% taxable. And if he's going to try to get ACA premium credits to support some of his health care, it may not work. So I just wanted to throw that out.
Certainly be a factor to have to consider. So you have to set up a 72T where the payments weren't so big to wreck his ACA premium tax credits. But remember, the limits are much, much higher than they used to be. They've relaxed that, so you do get some credits. But it still could be quite expensive for him. He doesn't mention that. Now, maybe he's got retiree medical, so that he has a very low-cost plan, even retiring at 50, that'll bridge him all the way to 65. I'm kind of reading into the fact that he didn't mention it, because if somebody has something that glorious, they usually mention it or point it out. But
my gut tells me no, because yeah, he says he's too. Got a new employer.
Yeah.
He's at a new employer, and he's only going to work there a few more years, so I'm not sure he could retire with health care benefits.
Right.
Anyways,
right.
Continue.
So my guess is no, and if that's true, if no is the answer, he doesn't have any subsidized retiree benefits for health care, he's got a long time to get to 65 in Medicare. Then just, you know, lifestyle. I think when you have no money going in and it's going out, that $1.8 million is going to drain a lot faster. Think about it. Compared to if he was retiring at like 62, he's got 12 more years of money draining from those accounts before he gets to typical retirement age. So factor in all the draining that's going to happen from 50 to 62, and the 1.8 isn't going to go as far as a lot of people think. Now, if he lives in a very low-cost area and has a very basic lifestyle, you know, his fun is like gym, where he doesn't blow a lot of money on expensive vacations and going out to eat. And he likes to garden and go hiking. Those are very low-cost items. Could he pull it off? Maybe. But I'd be concerned if he's not done a full-blown projection and analysis that he's got stuff going on there that doesn't magically get solved by 72T payments. So I know he was intending for our comment specifically on 72T. I think there's alarm bells going off that maybe he's addressed them. So he's overcome that already. He's figured this all out. This all dawned on him and he's considered it. If not, we needed to mention it. Beyond that, I think you covered most of the other things I was talking about or I was concerned about. And you can now describe how 72T payments work.
Well, I do want to point out my life is not as boring as Chris just painted it out to be.
I didn't say it was boring. I just said you had, you know, a cost of doing the things you like to do is relatively low. Unless
True.
You have some hidden expensive hobby I don't know about.
No, but I'm a gardener, but I would be what one would call an extreme gardener, so you don't even want to know how much bank I dumped into my
extreme gardening.
Trust me. You ever read the book called like I think it's the $88 tomato? I get that guy beat. I got that. $88 for tomato, that's a steal.
Okay. It's kind of like my $3.50 eggs, not a dozen, each egg. When I owned my own chickens, I made the mistake of doing the math on what those eggs really cost me. So it came down to about $3.50.
Per egg,
yeah.
Okay, let's get back to try to explain to this gentleman. Chris and I are planners, so this is how our minds think. We are, and I will jump into what 72T is, because there's probably some listeners who don't understand it, but we always lead with financial planning. It's how I've always run my firm. It's the direction the firm is going. When the caterpillar comes out of the butterfly, you're going to see that.
That sounds gross.
No, it's the other way around. When the butterfly comes out of the caterpillar or the cocoon, whatever the hell that, whatever it is, when we launch our new business model, you'll see we are truly taking planning, in our opinion, to the next level. And why do I share that? The man needs a plan. I'm guessing he's part of the FIRE movement. Isn't that, I forget what FIRE stands
Financially
for
independent, retire early.
Okay. I'm guessing he is. I could be totally wrong. There are planners who specialize, listener, in your situation. I've said this before, I think, on the podcast to a FIRE person. Start looking for a planner. You might have good luck on the XYPN network. These are planners who specialize in working. They're generally younger planners, XY planners, X generation, Y generation. And I am sure on that platform, and there's over 1,000 of those feisty people, and they're very good. I don't belong to the group, but I know several who are in it. They take planning seriously. Many of them have business models that will not require you to have them manage their assets. Many of them do, but many of them don't. But I think you might be able to find some planners there whose niche is helping people retire early. There's a lot of moving parts here that you may not be in considering. And Chris and I haven't even mentioned, mostly because I want to get on to other questions. So I'm going to lead my answer with planning. Put a plan in place. You strike me as a do-it-yourselfer, engineer type perhaps, I don't know, who's been crunching the numbers. Now, bring in someone to help you just to get a plan in place. And there are people who specialize with early retirement. They're out there. There's advisors out there. That's their niche. Find them. And again, you might want to try going to XYPN first. If not, just kind of Google and do some research, and you can come across and I think get the help you need. As far as 72T, in case everybody doesn't understand what it is, it's a special rule. It also goes by SEP, S-E-P-P, Series of Equal Periodic Payments.
Almost. Substantially equal periodic payments is what that stands for.
God damn it. I was testing you.
Just
very good.
Just want to
be
official on here.
Wait, since you did it. You did. You passed. Excellent, because I knew that.
No, I knew you
so,
did.
Excellent.
But we don't talk about them hardly ever.
No, no. And Chris passed, listeners. I made it look like I purposely got it wrong just to test him. And he did it. Wonderful, Chris. I'm very happy. If you have a star there, put one on your forehead.
Thank you.
Okay. Essentially what it is in these series of substantially equal periodic payments, you have an IRA, you retire before 59 and a half. If you take money out, you normally would have to pay a 10% penalty. The IRS has said, hey, we'll give you a little forgiveness on this. If you set up distributions from the IRA, and there are three different types of distributions you can do, I'm not going to get into them. If you set up a distribution payment schedule and stick to it for the longer of age 59 and a half or 5 years, whatever's longer, he's going to retire at 50, folks. He has to keep his series of substantially equal periodic payments, his 72T series, for 9.5 years, almost a decade. Mm-hmm. He can't break it. If you break that series, the IRS will impose the 10% penalty backdating to day one. If he broke it in year 8, where he's 58, almost to 59 and a half, he's almost there. And he broke it. He made a mistake. They are going to demand the 10% early withdrawal penalties for the previous 8 years that he's already taken. So you have to be really careful with it. The good news is the IRS does not make you consider all your IRAs as one when it comes to 72T. There's a few instances where the IRS doesn't apply the one big IRA rule, is what Chris and I call it, where you could have 10 separate IRAs, and if you're taking RMDs, they make you consider it as if you have one big IRA. Or the pro rata rule, Chris, you have one big IRA. You can't do the pro rata on just one IRA. It has to be all 10. But with 72T, they're very kind, in my opinion. So he can break his big $1.2 million IRA into a smaller IRA that hopefully the 72T payments from it for 10 years plus his $350,000 he has in his brokerage account can support him for 10 years. But if they can't, and he has to break into his 72T IRA and take more money, he is now going to owe the 10% penalty, so keep that in mind. But if he broke it into two IRAs and he had an IRA off to the side kind of for emergencies, if he has to break the payment schedule, if he breaks that IRA and takes money from it, his 72T payment schedule remains intact and he won't owe the back 10% penalty. Especially on his Roth conversions, Chris, he said he wants to continue converting. He did indicate, and I don't think I read it, $10,000 to $20,000 a year in Roth conversions during this 72T payment schedule. If that's what he wants to do, maybe he puts $200,000 or $300,000 off to the side in an IRA, Chris, and uses that for his small conversions over the next decade and keeps the million or so in the IRA for the 72T payments. Hopefully I explained that okay. Mm-hmm. We are not huge fans of 72T because I just want to make sure if you are retiring that early, I want to make sure you have enough to support the lifestyle you want. Through your 50s, your 60s, your 70s, and your 80s, you're looking at 40 years, listener. And what if you make it into your 90s? I don't know if 1.8 million today is enough to get you there. So he did indicate, Chris, he has a financial advisory firm. He named it. I'm not going to name it. I did kind of smile when he put that in because he told us. I'll read it. He said, where is it? Before you guys start complaining about the high fees they charge, I'm only paying them 0.6% on my assets. Point is, he went to an advisor already. He's paying that advisor 0.6% on his $1.2 million IRA. He's paying them over $7,500 a year. Ask them to start crunching some of these numbers for you. It's what you're paying them for, unless they're solely managing your assets. If they are and they're not going to give you any advice, find a planner and get some better advice. Or just calculations, not better advice. Crunch these numbers before you do what you're contemplating. Yeah. Okay, I beat that horse to death.
Especially with an advisor who specializes in early retirees, because there's nuanced issues and maybe they've got some strategies that have worked well for others who retire that early. That's just not an area that we focus on, so there might be things we're not thinking of that could help this particular individual.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This next question is really in your alley. It's very short. It's one sentence. I could go on, but I think you could be much more pithy.
I'll try.
It came in the day before this question we just answered came in. He did want us to know he is in beautiful wine country of Temecula, California.
Temecula.
Again, folks, I was testing Chris, and he passed with flying colors. Put 2 stars on your forehead today. Temecula. Everybody knew that's not how you pronounce it. I mean, you'd have to be a total idiot from Boston to think that's the way you pronounce it. All right, let me get to the question. My wife and I are My wife and I are 4 months away from retirement. Mm-hmm. We plan on selling our house and relocating. We are not sure if we are going to carry a mortgage or not. Should we wait until we sell and purchase our new home before hiring a financial advisor?
My opinion?
That's his question. So this is your opinion.
This sounds like a substantial financial decision, which a financial advisor slash planner may very well be able to help you analyze the pros and cons of said decision. So I would promote the idea of connecting with someone before you do this. Now, if you are dead set on what you're going to do and it's not really going to matter what they say, this is what you're doing, then you've just answered your own question. You're doing it either way. But if you'd like some input as to the pros and cons and maybe ways of financing the transition, financing at all, should you have a mortgage, should you not have a mortgage? If so, what type of mortgage makes sense? Should I apply for and get the mortgage approved before stopping work? That's a critical issue a lot of times. Not that it's impossible to get a mortgage after you stop work, but it reduces the number of lenders who are interested in you. So if nothing else, you don't have as much competition for your business, which would imply to me you're not necessarily going to get the best rate, even if you can get the mortgage at all, which does happen sometimes. Sometimes people find it very difficult to get a mortgage after they pull the trigger on retirement and have no income, and they have to admit to that. There's a lot of things going through my mind that could be, I guess, too bad we didn't talk to somebody before we did this, kind of things that could come up in the future. So I would stand firmly in the get advice beforehand.
Okay, I agree totally with what you said, Chris. But I do want to throw in there, and we've talked about this in the past. I think it's been a while since I've mentioned it. If you're going to be hiring someone, please understand there's an investment advisor and there's a financial planner. Make sure you're hiring the correct one. Oftentimes, they do the same job. Chris and I, we are financial planners first and foremost, and our butterfly is going to show that. But we also offer asset management services. And I've explained to everyone, we have hired an outsourced CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst. He helps us manage the portfolios. He does a lot of it. Why am I getting into this? Because it allows Chris and I to concentrate on planning. There are investment advisors who may offer financial planning, but their forte is leading with managing assets. You, listener, have more of a financial planning need, not necessarily an asset management need. So when you're interviewing advisors, ask them what do they lead with? What is their firm's specialty? Most firms will do both, but they're going to have a part, financial planning or investment management, that they tend to lead with. So I just would be careful that everyone generally calls themselves a financial planner, but some are specific as investment managers, and they'll offer a little bit of financial planning, but they generally, you can kind of find them because they generally want your assets and they want to charge you an AUM fee to hold them, and they might not have any way of working with them unless you bring assets to them. Then it's pretty easy to see, okay, they're investment managers who offer financial planning. I think he needs a financial planner more than an investment manager, at least for now. Yeah. In the future, you might need both. But anyways, you didn't give us much more info than that. I thought it was a cute, simple little question, but I agree with how Chris explained it. Do we have time for one more, or you got to
no,
go?
No, I think that's got to wrap it for today.
Okay. Well,
if
that's
you, you want to give a little tease for what's coming up, that might be okay, but otherwise we need to wrap.
No, I hope to get Greg to come on next week's EDU show. I'm not 100% certain he can. We'll ask him. But he's already answered it. He sent me this long email. He's got the answer. And Greg takes this question down a few rabbit holes, and then you and I can add some additional information in. So right now I'm thinking the EDU show will be Greg, but I'm not 100% certain. And, of course, we'll have Q&A shows covering a variety of questions next week as well.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thanks for everybody who put up with us today. We had a little bit of extraneous banter today, so we only got through four questions. Apologize to those of you who want us to do 10 or more questions per show. But we had a lot to get caught up on, if you will. Plus, we had some fascinating things that just came up, like the reverse bananas and all that. But anyway, if you have a question you'd like to submit for the show, just send it an email to Jim directly, jim@jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. In the subject line, make sure you indicate that it's a question for the podcast so it catches his attention. And Jim, you have a great weekend, and everyone else will be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.